Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel. It all starts right here, right now, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
A pleasant good morning to you. Alongside 670 The Score's baseball guru, Bruce Levine, I'm Zach Zaidman in for Spiegs, and this is Inside the Clubhouse, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Ahead on the show, a detailed look inside the Cubs draft with Cubs scouting director Dan Kantrovitz in just a few minutes. Plus, we'll visit with White Sox number one pick Garrett Crochet at 9:40. We'll reminisce about the home run chase of 1998 between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire. There's a new documentary about the chase coming out tomorrow. But Bruce, good morning. Let's start with the biggest question that remains unanswered. When will we see baseball in 2020?
July the 15th. That's my date. Be at Wrigley Field. I'm sure they'll be playing the White Sox, or the White Sox will be playing the Cubs at a guaranteed rate. No, it's, you know, that's there's so many unknowns, but we believe right now that as of tomorrow night, the MLB has given Players Association a deadline. If they don't come up with something that they agree with, I think the commissioner by Tuesday will implement a 50-game season that'll start somewhere in the middle of July. There'll be 3 to 4 weeks of spring training, and no expanded playoffs that I could see if under that scenario. So the season would end around September 27th. The playoffs would end the normal time, you know, maybe the third week of October or November 1st, and that would be your baseball in 2020. Now, I'm hoping that negotiation takes place. They've gotten a little closer, not too close money-wise, but philosophically they've gotten a little bit closer. They haven't gotten off of the philosophical point of the players wanting to be given a full prorated amount of money. But nonetheless, MLB has come up with some creative ways to give them more total dollars. So we'll see where it lies. I still am encouraged that they can get something done by tomorrow night.
What gives you that encouragement?
History. Only 1994 going into 1995 were the sides dumb enough to stop baseball totally. That was one of the worst situations in sports history, certainly for baseball. It took it many, many years to come back. We'll talk about that today with the Sosa McGwire documentary on Sunday night. But they can't afford having a baseball season missed while hockey, basketball, football are played. It's just it's an impossibility. So we're going to have baseball, but I just think that the players and the owners will come to some agreement here. The reporting on it has been so good that it makes it worse for both the Major League Baseball players and the owners, because everything is thrown out there immediately after it's proposed and rejected. And to the fans and to the media, it sounds like that there's nothing that can ever be done. We just happen to have both sides willing to share the information to put pressure on the other side. It's just negotiations, Zach. We're just more privy to it now.
Yeah, I don't know that I would say it's regular negotiations, though. It seems as though there's a lot of bad blood in the stuff that's gotten leaked. For example, the league yesterday proposed a 72-game season with a bump in guaranteed compensation and overall potential money earned, but baseball's deputy commissioner accused the players' union of, quote, enormous damage to the sport with its negotiating posture, and that is the kind of stuff that isn't helpful. It's just mind-boggling to me that this has almost turned into a pseudo-collective bargaining agreement type of negotiation when this is a unique circumstance based on the fact that a global pandemic hit right before the start of what was supposed to be the regular season, Bruce.
You know, Zach, everything you say is correct, except that because baseball is the only free market left out there in professional sports, meaning it doesn't have a salary cap, these things are never figured out ahead of time. And keep in mind, it would have been much more complicated for hockey and basketball as well if the players hadn't already been paid the lion's share of their salary. They were all paid up just about with 88% of the season in the books. So that and that's already figured out. It's 47% of the revenues that they agree upon. And there's nothing to argue about. In baseball, you have a free market. And the free market allows baseball teams to spend as much money as they'd like, to be bidding higher or lower depending on the year, and to allow players a more free movement than they do in the other sports. So to me, Zach, it's still more preferable, even though people are sick of the negotiations in public. I like the free market of baseball. I like the idea that players can get paid $35 million a year, that owners can they can go a different direction and take 2 or 3 or 4 years to rebuild. I just think that baseball is still the best system.
We'll get much more into detail regarding these negotiations a little bit later on in the show, Bruce. But there was some baseball, not on the field, but there was some baseball this week, and big-time baseball in terms of the impact it's going to have on both the Cubs and White Sox going forward. And pleased to be joined right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park, by Cubs scouting director Dan Kantrovitz.
Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Morning, guys. Good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing okay. I need to introduce you to Zach Zaidman, who's the pre- and post-game host for Cub Baseball on 670 The Score, 670thescore.com and radio.com. So welcome, and we appreciate your time today. I imagine you're really sick of us. You've talked to us like about 15 times already this week. So we'll
no,
get on with
okay.
it. Ed Howard, a wonderful pick for the Chicago area, for the Chicago Cubs, and for Ed Howard. I wonder, you know, what your response has been to his response about becoming a Chicago Cub.
Yeah, I to your point, Bruce, I think, you know, the more that it sinks in, the more that it just feels like it's kind of a transcendent pick. I mean, he's obviously got the talent on the field, the upside that we're looking for. He plays a premium position, has some electric tools, but the more that you get to know this guy, I think that just the more that you become impressed. And I think a lot of that's just, you know, that's what our scouts, John Pedrotti and Karan Walker, our two local scouts, that's what they've been telling us all spring. And, you know, when we met with him in person, that was the feeling we got. That was the vibe we got from him based on the Zoom interview we did. You know, but there's sometimes you just never know until you actually draft somebody and then the spotlight's on them. But, you know, Ed has just exceeded all of our expectations. And you know, I think he's going to be somebody that is just going to be, you know, maybe the face of what we're doing for a while. And I think there's nobody that I would rather have seen that position than Ed. So you know, nobody wants to sort of put too many expectations on him. But if there's somebody that can handle this, it's him.
What gives you the confidence that he can handle it? Because that's something that you can't scout. You have to meet and know a guy in order to understand those intangibles. When did you discover that was there with Ed Howard?
You know, I think I got that feeling when we met with he and his family back in January at Wrigley, and you ask a player some pointed questions. You ask them some tough questions. You ask them about adversity. And, you know, he's overcome adversity. He's just kind of faced the music in a lot of different cases. And it, more than anything, it's really just the maturity that he has. He's got, I think, an uncanny level of maturity for a high school kid right now. And, you know, it's interesting because during our Zoom call, I remember our national cross-checker, Ron Tossenson, who participated on the calls. I remember he asked Ed, you know, he said, you know, how are you going to deal with the media? How are you being a local guy? How's that something that you're going to be prepared to deal with? And, you know, without remembering the word by word answer that Ed gave us, suffice it to say what he did say, you know, gave us a lot of comfort that, you know, this is a guy that's going to, you know, not get distracted off the field. That's going to be able to hold up to the scrutiny of the media, and that's just going to go about his business and just keep working hard. That's what he's done his whole life. He's just worked really hard to get where he is. And I think that perseverance is something that really stood out to us.
Dan Kantrovitz, the Chicago Cubs scouting director, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse. And Dan, the feel good for me is this. Ed Howard is a product of the Chicagoland area system of young African-American players or players of color playing from the time they're young kids to this point where they play in good programs, they are funded and given good equipment and people around them, and they make it to this point. We're talking an awful lot about the fact there's only 7% African-Americans in Major League Baseball, the lowest since its peak in 1975, when it was close to 19%. At this point, how good should we feel about the Ed Howards of the world? How good should we feel about the Chicagoland area producing more kids like Ed Howard?
Yeah, it's hard to speak to, you know, any sort of program producing more of a particular person. You know, everybody is unique, right? And I think we feel like Ed is just super unique. So I don't think anybody wants to get carried away with saying, well, there's going to be more of so-and-so coming out of a particular program. I mean, every player that comes out of a college program is unique, and everybody that comes out of a high school program is unique in their own ways. And, you know, if we have, put it this way, if we have the opportunity to draft more Ed Howards in the future, I think we'll be really lucky.
Dan, you called this a pretty epic draft, and it wasn't just because you got Ed Howard in the first round. Can you give us a snapshot summary of the other picks in this draft and why you're so excited about what the Cubs came away with?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, Burl Caraway with our second pick. I think there's a tendency to look at Burl and say he's, you know, kind of a fast-moving college reliever. And while that might be the case, he's a lot more than that. I mean, Burl has elite stuff when you're talking about his two-pitch fastball breaking ball combo. In some ways, it's stuff that we actually haven't seen before in the draft. And when I say that, in glowing terms. It's something that when you break down his stuff from what our scouts are telling us, from what the data is telling us, it's dominant stuff, and it's stuff that we think could be dominant in the big leagues in the not too distant future. And it is really exciting the way he goes about it. I think people are going to love this guy. It's electrifying. It's fun to watch. And he's we couldn't be more thrilled with him in the second round or at any place in the draft for that matter. Jordan Wogu, our pick in the third, just brings the potential to have tremendous power, kind of that speed power combination, probably in a corner outfield spot, you know, but he played center field at Michigan this year. And I think that speaks to his overall athleticism. Michigan's one of the premier programs in the country, and you can't get away with putting somebody in center field that doesn't just have plus athleticism. And so, you know, I think his future probably is in a corner spot. But having the sort of speed power combo there is a rare profile in the draft. And, you know, factor in that he can control the zone. And I think Jordan's got a bright future. Now, you know, we're going to take advantage of, you know, the resources in our player development system, and whether that's Justin Stone on the hitting side and all the other coaches we have to continue to refine his swing and his approach. But, in the not too distant future, I think he's going to be a fun one to see wearing a Cubs uniform. And then I think Luke Little, the upside's been well publicized, and, you know, he was up to 105 during the quarantine time. And, I think in games, our scouts, Trey Forkaway, our local scout down there, has been on him for a long time. And, you know, because he's consistently upper 90s, topping out at 100, 101 in games. So the velo is real, but there's going to be, you know, we're going to have to keep working with him on his command, shaping his other pitches. He's an ideal candidate to put into our player development apparatus and try to improve what he's doing. I think, you know, he's still a young kid, and I think people forget that. We're not going to rush things with Luke, but, you know, the upside's real, and we'll see what we have. I think Cohen Moreno, I think, is a really exciting pick for us. I think it just showed some pretty unique collaboration between our scouting department, between, believe it or not, our R&D department, too. And I say believe it or not because typically you don't associate drafting a high school righty with having some pretty appealing analytics. But he does. You know, there's some unique traits that we identified in how he goes about it, through our ability to capture high-speed video. That really stand out to us, and we're pretty excited about Cohen. And I don't think it gets a lot of fanfare, you know, as sort of in the fifth round. But that's a high pick, and that's somebody that we're excited about. But he's young, and we're by no means going to rush anything there. But we've got some pretty lofty expectations for Cohen, and he's a great kid on top of it. So that's kind of an exciting five guys to continue to talk about.
Dan, 56 years ago and all the years in baseball before that, there was no amateur draft. And yep. Now with baseball rules this year, everyone after the fifth round can be signed by anyone, but the maximum is $20,000 for signing. How creative and how competitive could this market be, knowing that there's so many fine young players out there that may not want to sign, but then again, maybe somebody will not want to go back to college. Maybe someone will not want to go back or go to college, period, and sign out of high school. How creative and how much work does that create for you and your scouting staff?
Yeah, well, it's been kind of an all hands on deck effort for us over the last really 3 months when it comes to this. And when I say that, I mean we've had a process that's involved people from our R&D department, that's involved people from player development department, and that's obviously involved all of our scouts and even some people in the front office. And you know, we're talking about creating things like custom videos for players, showing them our player development app. Just to give them a glimpse of the resources that we have in our system and really just selling what we have, because we think there's a lot to sell in terms of what our player development staff does and what they bring to the table. And we think that should be appealing to players. Having said that, like you said, Bruce, it's really competitive. I think not just we're not just competing against other teams, which would be sort of was my instinct initially, just the expectation, but we're competing against, the college programs too. So we have to try to market, what we do in player development, which is an easy thing to market because of how impressive it is. But we have to make sure kids are aware that, you know, what we do, we think is pretty unique and special, not just compared to the other 29 clubs, but compared to the college programs. Having said that, there's going to be a lot of kids that, you know, are going to want to just go back to school. And I think it's not sort of your typical 6-7 round draft talent pool, but we might be able to sign a player that is sort of fits in that bucket. But it's going to be competitive. And once the quiet period expires tomorrow morning, you know, we're going to have a number of us on the phone calling some of these players. And I think we have to sort of manage our expectations there in terms of just the quantity of players that we sign. But, you know, I think it's something that we're, you know, obviously putting a lot of time into and want to make sure that, you know, if there are players that decide to sign, that that we're in the pole position.
Yeah, it's very similar to the NFL undrafted free agent market, which is always highly competitive. We're visiting with Cub Scouting Director Dan Kantrovitz, our final few moments with Dan. And I want to go back to when you were first hired. And I bring it up because now that the draft is over, can you share in a little bit more detail what you brought to an organization that already had certain things in place, as you've mentioned during this interview? What did you bring to mesh with that?
Yeah, well, I think, like you said, I mean, there's amazing people that work for the Cubs. They've had amazing drafts before I got here. And, you know, I think it's just there's been big shoes to fill from that standpoint. I wanted to just continue that. You know, I think my job has been to, you know, try to combine what we do on the scouting side and with what we're doing on the analytics side. You know, with the really talented people we have in research and development. And, you know, and I think we're just trying to make sure that we're maximizing every resource that we have because there's a lot of them. And then I think, you know, trying to put in perspective how the player, you know, how we might be able to be more aggressive in the draft in light of, you know, what we think we can do from a player development standpoint. I think really just trying to take, at the end of the day, the best way I could describe it is just to take advantage of every resource that we have with the Cubs to try to make the best pick, whether that's the talented scouts we have, whether that's the abundant resources we have in player development, or whether that's the pretty top-notch R&D department we have. It's, I think that was the message that I told our scouts back in January when we all met as a group in Chicago, and I think that continues to be my job to just make sure that I'm maximizing every resource that we have because there's just so many of them.
Dan, we appreciate your time. You deserve at least a 24 hours of rest before you get back to this. So all the best to you. Thanks for all the great communication and cooperation over this last week, and we'll talk to you sometime soon.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it. Thanks, Zach. Take care.
Dan Kantrovitz, the new scouting director for the Chicago Cubs, joining us in Inside the Clubhouse. He's Zach. I'm Bruce. We're here for you every week on Inside the Clubhouse from 9 to 11. Don't forget, tomorrow night after the ESPN production of The Long Gone Summer, the Sosa-McGuire race, a special here on The Score. Pat Hughes, Ron Coomer, and myself will talk about the ESPN show, as well as take your calls at 312-644-6767. Pat and I, of course, were there. Pat was there to make all of those great calls between Sammy and Mark during that wonderful summer. And Coombs, a former teammate of Sammy's, will also add some expertise. So join us after that show tomorrow at 10 o'clock Central Time.
22 years ago, it was quite a moment in Major League Baseball history, and we look at it a little bit differently now than we did then, and we'll get into that next hour. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Bruce, there's a lot to react to from what we just heard from the new Cubs scouting director, Dan Kantrovitz, following a draft that he called pretty epic. That's next on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine is here. I'm Zach Zaidman. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We're about 10 minutes away from visiting with the number one draft pick of the White Sox in 2020, Tennessee pitcher Garrett Crochet. Zach Zaidman, Bruce Levine with you on Inside the Clubhouse. We just finished talking to Cubs scouting director Dan Kantrovitz, and Bruce, he called it a pretty epic draft for the Cubs. Clearly, they're very high on the first round pick, Mount Carmel shortstop Ed Howard. But it's more than that, I think, that has the Cubs excited. And after watching the Cubs conduct their first draft with their new scouting director, what stands out about the things that Dan Kantrovitz is bringing to this organization?
Well, you know, I think we're getting the best players out there. And I think, you know, under Jason McLeod, we did as well. I think history will treat Jason McLeod very well for the contributions he made here in Chicago, getting players that helped the Chicago Cubs win a World Series. Obviously, there's been a dearth in pitching developed in the Cub organization, to say the least. But from the impact players that McLeod brought in, including the international players through their fine international group, they have really hit it high on young players. But with Dan, I think showing me that regardless of high school or college, they're taking what players they feel have the top upside. And not every team does that. Some teams, Zach, go for need. When, for instance, the Cubs, you know, you would think in two of the last three drafts, they took pitching number one. That made sense, but it also makes sense that you go after who you think has the biggest upside, the biggest chance to have an impact on your major league team, whether they're a pitcher or a position player. So first two picks are high school kids. You know, that's interesting. You know, a shortstop and a pitcher. And that usually means it's going to take a little while longer to develop. But in these two cases, I think you'll hear the rhetoric and you'll see these players. And I don't think it's going to take forever for Burl Caraway to get there and be in the Cubs bullpen. I don't think it's going to be more than a couple of years for Ed Howard. He might be the next Robin Yount. He might be the next Starlin Castro, be in the major league starting at shortstop at age 19.
It is interesting how the goal now is, in addition to finding the best player, is to taking guys that once you get them acclimated to all the science that the Cubs have behind the scenes, you can accelerate that development. You talked about Ed Howard, the second round pick, the lefty Burl Caraway is a guy that Baseball America called the best reliever in the draft class, fastball in the high 90s, has that beautiful curveball. He's not a big guy in stature. They've compared him to Billy Wagner. Remember the former Astros reliever? Mm-hmm. He's 6 feet, 173 pounds. But I think it's the pitching that to me stands out. You know, he talked about the fourth round pick, the 19-year-old Luke Little, who's 6'8" from San Jack in Texas, 105 miles per hour during the quarantine in bullpen sessions. So you're seeing that the Cubs want those big arms in the pen going forward, which is something that's been an issue for them on the major league level the last couple of years.
We'll continue to talk about the White Sox and Cubs draft here. Top of the hour, we'll also talk about the Sosa McGuire documentary, 30-30 on ESPN Sunday night. We'll talk to Ron Coomer later on in the show as well. But next up for us is the Chicago White Sox and their fine young number one pick, Garrett Crochet. And we will talk to him coming up after this break. You're listening to The Score. This is 670thescore.com.
When we get hands on this kid, we are going to be working fastball location everywhere. We're going to be slider location, both sides of the plate, dirt when we want it. And we're going to be working on a changeup, a continued development of a changeup. Because that's going to complete those three things are his package. Those three pitches are his package now. We're going to try to take them as far as we can take them.
That's White Sox pitching coach Don Cooper earlier this week on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, talking about the White Sox top draft pick. Zach Sabin, Bruce Levine with you on Inside the Clubhouse. And Bruce, special guests on The Score. Join us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park.
The number one pick, Zach, that you talked about, Garrett Crochet, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse this Saturday morning. Garrett, welcome to Chicago. Welcome to the Chicago White Sox. Welcome to 670thescore.com. You're going to enjoy, hopefully, all of that, including our station, as we get to know you. Congratulations.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you all for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Hey, when they talk about, when you hear Don Cooper talking about your strengths already, have you had a conversation with Coop yet? And are you interested in finding out what your next step is, pitching coach-wise, with the very interesting, very smart, and very animated Don Cooper?
No, I haven't yet had a conversation with him, but yeah, I'm very intrigued to see the first step in the player development. I'm very excited to see what they want me to start working on, and I'm just ready to get to work.
Garrett, it seems like as soon as you were drafted, at least here on the south side of Chicago, the big topic of conversation became, who do we compare you to? And the name Chris Sale gets consistently mentioned. But who do you look at yourself? Who's your comp when you go about pitching and trying to work on being the best Garrett Crochet that you can be? Who did you look to try and mimic your game after?
I kind of did exactly what you said. I kind of just try and be the best Garrett Crochet. I've never really looked to anybody in particular. I looked a little bit to Sale when I was modeling my slider, but other than that, I've kind of just been trying to be the best pitcher that I can be and trying to not compare myself to anybody and stay within myself.
Were you prepared to be picked by the White Sox? I mean, was there a feeling that, you know, we knew you were going to go high in the draft, but you're sitting there through the first 10. What is that like for you and your family, seeing the first 10 go, the build up to the commissioner coming up to the stand, not hearing your name for the first 10, and then, boom, it is Garrett Crochet going to the Chicago White Sox?
Yeah, so I knew the White Sox had some interest going into it. I had a Zoom meeting with them leading up to the draft, and I felt pretty comfortable with them, and I felt like they liked talking to me. And as far as the build-up to it, man, it was incredible. I truly can't put it into words the feelings that me and my family were feeling at the time and how emotional it was. But it was very exciting to see my name go off the board, and definitely to a good organization like the White Sox. I'm just excited to be a part of it and excited to get going.
Talking with the White Sox top draft pick, 6'6 lefty Garrett Crochet out of Tennessee. Can you share with us what those Zoom conversations were like? Because I'm sure you had others with different teams. What stood out about that meeting with the White Sox?
Well, the main thing was most of my Zoom meetings, I would have about four or five guys on the call. But with the White Sox, there were about 10 or 11 guys. So I knew right away the seriousness of the situation. And as far as what it consists of, it's really just them getting to know me, just some personality questions, getting to know how my development progressed, really what works for me, kind of how I like to train and how I like to prepare to throw, routines and stuff of that sort, kind of just what makes me tick.
So you grow into another person, both physically and I'm sure emotionally, from your freshman year to your senior year. You want to talk about that growth chart personally and also on the field as you grow into this much bigger person and bigger than life baseball player?
Yeah, no, I came in and I was a wide-eyed freshman, kind of just like most people are when they come into the SEC. And I was excited, and I had a little bit of adrenaline going most times when I would go out there to pitch. And but I was really just excited to be pitching in the SEC. I feel like the main thing in my development was just developing a true confidence and really knowing what I'm capable of doing and believing in myself when I'm out there on the field. That was really the main adjustment I feel like that I made in my development, as well as I added about 40 pounds after getting onto campus from freshman year to junior year. So I believe it really was a culmination of all the things.
The fastball is well documented. You can go over 100 with it, and that's always a helpful skill at the major league level. The slider is another extremely solid pitch. What's the third pitch that you need to dominate, in your mind, that you need to take your game to the next level?
The third pitch I believe I have right now, being a changeup. I believe not many people saw it, as I was really just utilizing it mainly in fall scrimmages, and my starting to the season was a little bit delayed, but I think that's a really good pitch, and I think that's going to be able to get outs for me at the next level.
Yeah, it's interesting, Garrett, that you know, you were not necessarily throwing very hard. You were throwing hard for a freshman maybe coming in throwing at 87, 88 miles an hour. And then your other pitches had to develop first before the velo came. I guess that was a hidden positive for you as you moved forward.
Yeah, no, for sure. The slider, I hadn't really thrown but for like a year going into college. There was definitely a lot of development needed there. My fastball kind of just came along, like I said, when I put on all that weight and gained a lot of muscle and just developed better body control. I feel like it was the growth spurt in high school that kind of stunted the fastball, but eventually it kind of caught up with my mindset on how I like to pitch, and everything's been working out the way it has now.
Where do you see yourself as having the most success immediately? Do you feel that it'll be out of the pen, or do you initially want to be a starter right away? And if the White Sox discussed any of this with you?
They have not discussed any of it with me, and I'm comfortable with doing both, as I did both in college, and I felt like I did both pretty well. And I definitely feel like there's some pros and cons to both, so asking me to choose myself rather than being told which one to do, I feel like it's a hard answer to give. But I'm just willing to do whatever the White Sox want me to do. I mean, I feel like they picked me with a plan in mind, and I'm just excited to follow that plan.
So how signable are you? And obviously you can't give away all of your business technique to getting with the White Sox, number one. And number two, how conservative will you be becoming an instant millionaire? That is some pretty heady stuff.
As far as the signability concerns go, we're following a process right now, and we're checking some boxes, and I think there's a few more boxes that we need to check. And but as far as how conservative I would be, I think that I would be fairly conservative, just due to the first round slotting being kind of delayed to the next year, the signing bonus being delayed a little extra longer. So I feel like it would only be smart to be at least a little more conservative than I had originally planned.
How's your shoulder?
Yeah, but you can get a new vet or something like that. I mean, you owe yourself a car, don't you?
Yeah, I like to think so. Might have to.
Garrett, much was made about the shoulder. That's fine, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I believe most people saw the video of me hitting 100 on Twitter after the injury. And my first outing, actually, after being sat out for so long, I was up to 99. So I'm back and I'm doing just as good as I was before.
In closing with you, and Zach and I certainly appreciate it, looking forward to meeting you in person sometime soon, hopefully when baseball gets back here pretty soon. When you look at the progress of where you're going to go and what you're going to do, is it confusing to you now knowing that baseball has no minor league to send you to right now, and that you might end up directly with 48 or 49 other guys, including big leaguers, coming to Chicago and initially working out with the team, because it's going to be 50-man rosters with, a taxi squad. So it's kind of up in the air at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe it's really up in the air. It is a little bit confusing not knowing which way I'm going to go. But, I mean, like I said earlier, I'm kind of excited to see what the White Sox lay out for me and the plan that they've developed. But the way that you were talking about the taxi squad, I'm super excited for the possibility of that. I'm not sure if it'll work out for me or if that's what the team has in mind. But definitely excited just to see all the possibilities as they unfold.
Zach and I appreciate it very much. We appreciate you joining us. Welcome to Chicago, and I know it's going to be an exciting time for you and the Chicago White Sox coming up in the next couple of years. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks again, Garrett.
For sure. Thank you. Thank you all for having me.
All right. Garrett Crochet, Zach, interesting young man, and I guess they feel the sky is the limit. You know, the one interesting thing about the White Sox, Zach, and you asked it in your question about bullpen or starter. Almost all of their really outstanding young pitchers coming up through the minor leagues ended up going from starters in minor league ball, initially coming up to the major leagues in the bullpen for a short or a little lengthier period of time. And then the Mark Burleys, the John Garlands, the Chris Sales, went on to become starting pitchers relatively quickly after that. But just getting a taste of baseball in the bullpen and being around it, it's kind of a maturity thing that the White Sox are pretty well known for.
Yeah, especially I think coming in low pressure situations, because I think it's like being an NFL quarterback. You don't want someone's confidence to go early. And I think the White Sox do a very good job of making sure their best young arms get an opportunity to gain almost little teaspoons of confidence before they eventually become starters at the major league level. What is interesting, though, is when you look at the White Sox from a minor league standpoint, you can make a case that Crochet automatically becomes their best left-handed prospect, wouldn't you say?
Well, it just depends on, how deep you go in their system. But certainly the upside is pretty big. I mean, you have a guy that, as you said, can throw 100. They drafted, another left-handed pitcher as well, two left-handed pitchers. They're probably just as excited about Jared Kelly, the left-handed pitcher they signed out of high school. Freddie Horn, with their fifth pick, is another guy. So I think they feel this has been a big draft for them, especially one and two, with getting Crochet and getting Kelly. That to them it feels like they got two number one picks in the first two rounds.
Yeah, help me understand why Kelly fell the way he did into the second round, because he's got great size, another power thrower, former football player who then, after his sophomore year, quit that to concentrate solely on baseball. But many had Kelly going in the first round. Why did he drop?
I don't know if it was signability, Zach, or not. Not quite sure if they thought he was going to college or not. The kid has great stuff. I mean, he was projected in a lot of mock drafts in the top 15. You know, I think Jim Callis had him up there pretty high as well. So they are thrilled to have Kelly. Now, hopefully he's going to sign. I mean, they're going to go up slot for him. In other words, they're going to have more money to pay probably above that number two slot that normally the money is there for. They're going to pay more than that for him, and they're going to gladly do so, because with these two, you could be looking at two rotation guys here in 2 years or 3 years that are going to make an impact for the White Sox.
Yeah, Kelly has an offer from the University of Texas, which he's debating, and obviously the White Sox will try to sign.
Yeah, Texas doesn't quite pay quite as much as the White Sox, but nonetheless.
That we know of, yes. And the thing with Crochet that stands out to me is that the White Sox made their decision even though Crochet only had 13 college starts. So it shows you that there is a great deal of potential, which he flashed in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, obviously this year got wiped out. You know, I mean, he had something initially here, but because of the pandemic, you know, everybody's college and high school season were wiped out. College got a little bit more in. Guys like Ed Howard, coming from high school, got zero in this year, nothing. Everything was built upon his junior year in high school. So, you know, there was an awful lot of video scouting of guys, extra video scouting before this draft, because there was no one to go watch after March 15th.
One of the most exciting moments in Major League Baseball history was the home run chase of 1998. Why are we talking about it? Find out next. Bruce Levine is here. I'm Zach Zegman. This is Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.